The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 31st of October, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals, EUZ. And Lawrence discusses their recent extension drilling campaign on their zinc, lead and silver project in Spain. Also on the podcast, I have Nuno Sacramento, Chief Operating Officer of SafeStay, that's SSTY, and Nuno discusses their latest acquisition, a hotel in Vienna, which they intend to convert into one of their stylish hostels. Also on the podcast, David Sefton, Executive Chairman of Anglo-African Oil and Gas, AAOG, and David provides an update on operations and also discusses their financing facility. Plus, as always, two lists, top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see the top tens of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio and allocate to unquoted companies, Rockpool, one of our sponsors, offers growth equity and high-yield lending for established and profitable private companies. Investing can be tax efficient, and Rockpool Services is based on thorough due diligence and continual company monitoring. Capital at risk. Visit rockpool.uk.com or call 0203 8548 100.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Executive Director at Europa Metals, EUZ is a ticker. Lawrence, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Justin. How are you going?
Good, thanks. And you've had a couple of releases today, quarterly activities and cash flow report, plus you've had drilling update at, of course, your project in Torralde in Spain. That's the lead zinc silver project, and heading towards scoping study. But I suppose, you know, I always ask this, I've sort of done it for you, but you summed up nicely. There are people listening, new to the markets, even though the markets are dreadful at the moment. But if people are looking around, looking for bargains at the moment, and I'm not saying you are anyway, do your own research, everyone. But, you know, summarise, Lawrence, Europa Metals, what's it about?
We've got a high-grade zinc resource with great lead, great silver, 19 million tonnes ore to JORC 2012, a lot of metal in the ground in a politically stable region of Spain. And we've been doing good, cost-effective, solid work since the end of last year, and I think consistently delivered on what we're doing. We're slightly... we're waiting to put the scoping study out, which is around the corner, talking to lots of investors about that, but we're very happy with how everything's going at this present moment in time. What you're paying for this distressingly low share price is a lot of metal in the ground to find and not a lot of shareholder money spent getting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because obviously a lot of it was historically drilled. So you've done some extension drilling. This means you've ventured out further than you've ever done before. And so what have you done and what have you found there, Lawrence?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we had a little chat before we came on. I don't think there's any secret about that, Justin. I'm just going to repeat what I said then, which is, you know, it's a bit of a nerve-wracking decision to decide to drill out to the east in a place which has never really hit mineralization outside of your resource when you've got a lot of high-grade resource. And you could say, well, you were foolish to even thinking about that. But I'll tell you what we're trying to do is we're actually trying to build something here and build shareholder value by defining a proper project. So we did cost-effective near-surface RC drilling, so not expensive at depth diamond drilling, which is how all the other drilling on Toralpa structurally is done, out to the east, because we wanted to see if the contact zones, i.e. the areas between outside of the existing resource, actually continue. And is there mineralization out there? And rather fantastically, we've repeatedly hit the contact zones to the east, and we found mineralization within 300 meters, which is great, because generally speaking, the higher grade areas within the trial resource, but you can go and look at them. They're lower than that, although shooting up. And then we had one intersection which was really very high, and which we didn't expect, but it's a good thing, even though we didn't expect it. But we're just trying to work some of that information back into our understanding of Taral and what we might think is out to the east. The point is, with 100% strike rate from all the RC drilling just at shallow surface with the repeated contact zone, suddenly we've got this neat little package. We've got a neat, strong package which stacks up against lots of existing mines at the moment and has great grade. But suddenly we've got all this extra potential out to the east, which is along the longest part of our license area, if you like, for the future. So needs work done on it, and it's probably future work, but suddenly you've got a lot of potential for years or scale or whatever it has, and that's pretty exciting. Now we're infill drilling right as we speak. I put a little picture out on Vox this morning. I don't know if you saw it, Justin.
I haven't yet, but I will look at it.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay, well, that was literally taken yesterday morning, which is from the current diamond drilling campaign, which is infill. So now we're going back into the resource, and that's going to be our key focus, is it's diamond drilling into the main part of the resource, and over time we'll be getting deeper and we'll be looking at the higher grade areas. But this RC drill program is significant because what it tells us is there's continuation there, and what that tells us is there's probability, possibility, potentiality for scale, even more scale. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So at the moment, so you're saying essentially at the moment, it's 19 million tonnes of 6.9 zinc equivalent. That could potentially in the future get bigger, and therefore that could add to the sort of life of the mine if you become a mine. But now you're going back into your known area to get more confidence in the inferred resource. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Although I'll temper that because I'm going to give you the alternate view, which is, I was having a chat with Miles the other day. He said, look, it's the RC drilling program is what it is. It's reporting on what it is. Equally, we just don't know what's down there under near this. It's a good indication. It's good signs. But equally, it needs a lot more testing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't want to lead anyone on the garden carp, but it's really quite interesting that mineralization is there, especially so near to surface. So let's just temper this with some caution. But it's a great result from a very cheap first bit of drilling from the Europa team. And as you say, now we're back into the infill zone.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you could have done drilling out there and found nothing. I mean, it's potentially, but every drill hole, you've got mineralization, and one of them returned what 11.72% for 2 meters there at 251 meters. So that's decent results in all four holes. Is mineralization? That's good results, isn't it?
No, completely so. I mean, you know, as time goes on, we've got to have a look into depth and start looking at. At lengths and average grades and all that sort of thing. But for a first drill campaign out to the east into the area, it's a great response. I mean, if you look at the project area and you look at the old mine next door to us, Antonina, etc., and the area lithology, you can see that these mineralizations potentially run. But you have to test them, and it is quite nerve-wracking, and we have done that.
Absolutely. So let's go to the sort of scoping study. It did say you're on schedule for that in the RNS. What is that? What is that schedule?
Well, look, it's like said before, I thought we were going to get it. We originally said it was going to be, I think, Q4 an announcement. I then thought we'd get it finished before then. In the end of September, we didn't do that, and that has disappointed people. And again, I apologise for that. The reason it is fundamentally delayed is for two reasons, which we've spoken about before, Justin, which is putting new data into the scoping study, i.e. the JORP upgrade resource. Mm-hmm. And also, honestly speaking, it's a board. It's a company full of people who have helped develop real projects and real mines. So we've spent a lot of time testing to near destruction every single economic scenario. So it has taken a bit longer, but, you know, what we've been doing really is it's been a combined process where there's different types of scoping studies. There's a scoping study, which is effectively just an overt marketing tool, which says, oh, it's going to be brilliant, and it can sort of be like this to 30%. And then we don't want that. We're working towards a scoping study which we can take to strategic groups, which when they start kicking the tires and say, well, prove it. Where did you get that number from? What's that based on? Show me something like it. We've got all the working and the backup. So I'm hoping we're going to have something out soon. I know some of the investors have started emailing saying, is it going to be before Christmas? And oh, yes, no, absolutely, it's going to be before Christmas. But there we are.
Yeah, so just to understand it, I mean, there are scoping studies that, you know, fit minimum requirement, and there are scoping studies that are edging closer towards a pre-feasibility study. And so is that what you're trying to do to make sure there's all angles are covered off here?
Yes, I think so. I think scoping studies can be different types of things. We're obviously, as well as AIM listed, we're ASX listed, so we want to make sure we're doing anything to in line with JORC. But essentially, look, there's lots of very good scoping studies out there, don't get me wrong, but scoping studies are used for slightly different purposes. The purposes we want to use this scoping study is to understand for ourselves the economics of the project and what potentially the equipment looks like and all that sort of thing, but also things like throughput and having the grade controls and all that sort of thing, and also talking to peer-to-peer or larger groups or strategic groups who can help build value for shareholders in a number of different outcomes or development scenarios. Otherwise, you're left with a piece of paper and a series of meetings where they say, well, that's very nice, but why don't you come back where you've done some proper work?
Yeah.
We're actually trying to move this towards feasibility study. You know, that's why we're doing infill drilling stage by stage. That's why we're making good progress on the licensing or the land development changes. That's why we initiated that. We spend a lot of time doing that and talking to people and groups on time. That's the type of thing we're doing. That's the type of company we want to be.
Yeah. And so, I mean, listen, at the moment, the AIM market is very hard and it's been battered. And, you know, people are selling on anything, really. It's ridiculous. I mean, I'm sure market makers are moving it down as well. But it's a very short-termist sort of thought, you know. And I mean, I keep saying I think we'll have a heck of an end-of-year rally. But I think people are not even looking that far ahead. So do you get a sense of where the market is like this when you're in the middle of a project like this? And do you ever keep an eye on it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do. I'm surprised at it at the moment, I have to say. I mean, it really is a bit of, it doesn't really make sense in a lot of ways, and it's a bit of a bloodbath. And as a director of a mining company, I don't really want to be the person to go, they were undervalued, it's all unfair. Mm-hmm. What I think, let's talk about something interesting instead, which is I've just done Hong Kong 1-to-1, we're going to be doing London 1-to-1 conference with Europa. And we've got lots and lots of meetings set up with good people and all the rest of it. But if you go to the investor panels, and I went to some earlier in the year with Mining Journal as well, their first Mining Journal Select conference, there's a couple of things. First of all, there's the hot commodities, and I'm glad to say that zinc, copper, and less interesting to me, coal, are those commodities. But then the second theme within the panel is always, what on earth are we going to do about available equity capital, equity markets, and actually trying to do the work that companies need to do? Because it hasn't worked for a long time. The markets have always been down. Valuations are low. But I think, and what you've already seen this year, actually, is things tend to rise very fast. You do get big runs. Honestly speaking, I think you're going to see a situation where you have slingshot valuations on available metals or projects that can actually get into production. I'm afraid to say I think it's going to be quite binary. I don't see an awful lot of it built by 5% every week. I think you might see big jumps, and then I think you might see exponential jumps up and down. Because I think at the end of the day, let's just section out the equity capital markets from this. I think there's a small pool of good projects who are actually viable to put into production. And I think mostly the value will be realized around or very halfway through feasibility, let's say, when you've got indicated that type of level. And then fundamentally, that's when you start looking at development options or somebody comes and purchases you. So it's a long answer to your question.
Yeah. So I've said that, you know, on Twitter yesterday. A lot of people were saying it's very hard, and some people didn't think getting out. And I said, well, listen, wait till the end of the year, because it's amazing how fast fiat changes to greed. You know, and that whipsaw element you see. I mean, I've seen it many a time, and I've seen people getting out at the bottom, and then you know, they've seen that whipsaw happen, and then getting back in at the top. And you think, no, you should have, you know, stayed for the pain, and you would have got the gain. You know, so that does happen, and it's odd. That's why I love the markets. It's almost like when you believe it can't happen, it does, and when your mindset is in that really negative sense of it, that's when it does happen. You know, and it happens so many times, and it's easy to forget that it does happen, but it does happen. You know, it does fly sometimes, and so and there's that fundamental need for these elements, isn't there? You know, so.
No, I agree. I mean, I think probably there's at least three of things which I've been involved in which have been quite successful. All three of them, I remember being on the near of collapse with everybody just nearly giving up and just giving it one last try. And actually, it worked rather well as it came down with, you know, big asset sale or getting the right money or the right time, etc. But yeah, it's not churning yield stocks. It's not PE ratios. I mean, there were some interesting comments the other day on PE ratios of tech versus, I think it was some yoga pants company, with the yoga pants company on something like 400 PE ratio, with tech on 3.5. You know, it's not that game. But equally, metals, availability of physical metal, it's binary. It's always been binary, and that's where you see massive valuation changes. And it shouldn't be like that. It should be more efficient. It should be more measured. But right at this moment in time, just I can't see it getting anything like that in a sensible fashion, if I'm honest.
Okay, all right. Well, Lawrence, finally, I'm going to give you a chance to summarise everything you've said here in three bullet points, and if people are listening to this, like the sound of where you're at the moment, I'm just checking out. That's that your market cap is just sub six million pounds there. So, and they like the sound of this, but are not yet following you. Give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Infill drilling campaign results going to be coming up. Looking at indicated resources now, 90 million ton lead zinc silver resource, hopefully over the next 12 to 18 months. Politically stable region, doing lead zinc silver in Castilla in Lom, doing cost effective work and track record of results over the last during 2018.
Yeah,
and just getting on with the work.
Yeah, and I suppose there's some, you know, big sort of news out before the end of the year, isn't
it? Well, it's pretty much what I'm talking about. It's infill drilling campaign, completion of the scoping study. I think those are pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be honest, I mean, those are pretty solid bits. But, yeah, it's going to be an ongoing process. There's going to be a lot of work to do, but... there might be a few other bits of news in there as well, but we want to build value from real assets. And, you know, the other thing is, you were seeing in the quarterlies today, Justin, that we relinquished all rights on the Largo licenses, and we're going to continue talking to the Junta of Galicia, who we're big fans on, like working with them, like talking to them. But those license areas just aren't the right shape and size to, you know, actually do meaningful work. So rather than putting shareholder money into a few sexy director's holes, which we don't really think will go anywhere because of the size of the licenses, we've just decided to say, well, that's not for today. Let's put our money and our time towards what we're doing in Tyrol. If there's opportunities in the future in Galicia, that's great. But we're not going to do things just for the sake of doing them. It's about focus.
Yeah, absolutely marvellous. Lawrence, thanks for that. And I said lots of things happening before the end of the year, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nuno Sacramento, Chief Operating Officer of SafeStay, SSTY is the ticker there. Nuno, thanks for joining me again.
Hi, Justin. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, you are keeping busy. I mean, you've announced a new site, and we'll get into that in a bit. And literally, you're on last month talking about the site in Brussels. But before we get into the details, for people listening right now, Nuno, who are not familiar with SafeStay, explain, summarise what it's all about, please.
So we've joined the hostel market with an IPO in 2014, and the whole idea is to create differentiation in that market. There was no brand and no scale to the existing operators, and we thought we could go in with a premium product to absolutely disrupt that market and create some differentiation. And I think we're doing a great job of that. We've started in 2014, very much UK bound, and many opportunities came up in Europe, and it felt like it was the right thing to do by going to Europe. So last year we bought a number of properties in Spain. We then went on to Portugal, the Czech Republic. There's an acquisition in Paris that is being fitted out. So in the last 12 months, we've trebled the size of the company, which has been really exciting.
Yeah, and it is a certainly a difference. Because like I said, I've said before this, but when you mention hostels, a certain image comes to mind. But yours not like that, are they? Quite stylish, quite upmarket.
Absolutely not. The budget sector in hotels is completely saturated. Then nobody knows what to do in terms of differentiation. And we see hostels as the perfect next option in terms of exploring that market. So we think the hostel market is going to explode in the same way that the budget hotel segment exploded probably in the beginning of the year 2000. What we offer is a great quality product. It's a great bed. It's great environment. It's a design-led environment with some technology thrown into it. Our population is mostly millennials, so you have to be tip-top in terms of what you offer in terms of the product and in terms of the quality of the product that you offer.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at the site now and see you book a one night in the Holland Park Hostel for like £17, which is obviously it's a shared dorm, but that's highly competitive, isn't it? It's unbelievable that.
Absolutely, and it's a discerning customer that has money in their pockets. They know where they want to spend it, but they're being pretty smart about buying their accommodation at the right price. Our occupancy is hovering around 80% across the year, and our average bed rate is £20. So you got a deal in there. On average, you'd be paying £20 in any of our locations.
Yeah. Okay. So today you announced that you've secured a new site in Vienna. Perhaps can you explain the key points on this latest transaction, please?
Well, it's a really exciting deal. We've been incentivized to take the deal with some breaks in terms of the rent, and we're being offered some money to do the fit-out. So it's an absolute perfect tenancy agreement. We get a lease for 20 years, and the hotel is a beauty. It's in Schönbrunner Straße, which is just by the opera, which is a critical central point of Vienna. The 52 bedrooms are just fantastic. Every bedroom will be en suite. Every dorm will be en suite. So again, with this premise of creating true differentiation in the hostel market, we think we'll put something like 234 beds in there. And this is how hostels leverage the opportunity time and time again. We'll have more sleepers paying a great deal to stay with us, and we've got great locations, and that's something that is typical to SafeStay. Wherever you stay in SafeStay, you're going to be in the center. In this case, we're right by the opera, a walking distance from the opera, which is prime location in terms of Vienna.
Yeah, They're nice. And, you know, I was saying earlier, you mentioned, last month it was you were on here talking about the acquisition of a site in Brussels, which is also a hotel you plan to convert. So how do you know, what gives you confidence that these sites, you know, will make good hostels?
Well, we've got the expertise in terms of property, and the chairman, Larry Lippman, has done a number of ventures where that probably the most well-known is SafeStore, where he managed to identify 22 properties in the space of 2 years and take the market cap from 1 million to 100 million in the space of 2 years, which is a fantastic turnaround for a business. In here, we're benefiting from his property expertise as well. He's got the contacts. SafeStore is starting to become a name, so people come knocking on the door, offering us opportunities. We've been very selective about the opportunities, but with that property expertise that we get from Larry and the operational expertise that we've got in the business, we know that we can go in, convert it to our model, make sure that we retain a premium in terms of offering, so we can retain a premium in terms of pricing, and through that we create a great business model. As you said, Brussels last month, but we had done a third property in Barcelona just in April this year, and our ambition is to continue like that. We've got quite a few properties in the pipeline that we would like to explore to completion, but you know, these things, it has to be right, and it has to serve the three main stakeholders. We want to be offering a great opportunity for our teams to work in an exciting and vibrant environment. We also want to make sure that our guests are getting a truly differentiated hostel experience. But it has to be right for the shareholders, which ultimately are a very important part of the equation.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you're expanding here. You're very ambitious. Like I said, we spoke last month about Brussels, now Vienna. So how many sites do you need to sort of gain sort of critical mass? And what advantages does this bring to the group?
Oh, well, the ambition is that at 20 properties, so we're on 13, we're now present in 7 different countries. We've got 13 properties in the books, and our modeling tells us that from 20, we start becoming incredibly efficient, and we start being able to have a combination of acquisitions through cash generated by the business. We will become very interesting in terms of share price and share value, so we're sure that investors will come knocking on the door. But ultimately, 20 is a tipping point, and beyond 20, there's another very interesting point for the business modeling, which is 40 properties. We've mapped them all out. We know the cities we want to be in. Vienna, for sure, was a critical market to be in. It's undersupplied. We know that we can command the premium in there. It's a very exciting location. It starts creating a Central Europe network. And we know that we can leverage all our contacts, our suppliers, all the accommodation network that we've built with online travel agents and so on and so forth. So every new property from 1 to 40 adds some leverage and some advantage to the rest of the business.
Yeah, okay, marvellous stuff. Well, one final thing, Nuno. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, the story, but are not yet following it, give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to the watch list, please.
We've got a great, great product. SafeStay is developing a strong brand with premium positioning in the hostel market. We appeal to an expanding community of guests. Don't think as hostels as the UK knows it. This is attracting families, making city breaks affordable again, young professionals moving into different cities. It's just a very exciting product from a guest perspective. But by creating a differentiated product, we're also making sure that we're cutting our presence into an underinvested market, which is ripe for consolidation. That's our true ambition, is to create a brand that is consolidated within the hostel market. And finally, our property expertise allows us to fit out SafeStay in most any building, guaranteeing the right returns for our investors. And it's been a very, very exciting journey, and there's a lot more to come from it.
Excellent stuff. Nuno, good to chat to you. And like I say, lots to come from the story. So hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Great. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Sefton, Executive Chairman of Anglo African Oil and Gas. AAOG is the ticker. David, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Justin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. But it's a very busy period for you at the moment. I know you're in the middle of the drilling that well there. So it's nice for you to come on and do this operational update and talk about the financing facility. So you released that RNS a while back. Before we get into that, David, I always like to do this because we assume everyone knows, but that we know there are new people joining and brand new people to the podcast. So just give a quick overview. Anglo African Oil and Gas, what are you all about, please?
Well, AAOG, Anglo African, is we're a listed E&P company. We have a principal asset, which is a field called Tilapia in the Republic of Congo, not the DRC, but the old French Congo. This is an existing producing field, so we are a producing oil company. And we are currently drilling a new well, which is targeting several horizons, including the horizon from which we're currently producing, but also two extremely interesting further horizons, one of which is appraisal and one of which is exploration.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so last week you announced an operational update and financing facility, and let's go into that first. Let's go into the operational update. What's happening there, David?
Well, we're drilling well in accordance with the timetable, including the contingency. Just some fairly normal maintenance on the rig, S&P replacing a few seals, we're progressing well from here. Actually, it's useful to just talk about the operations side at the moment, because I think going forward from here, we are going to, over the next few weeks, go through the various target horizons, and I think as a company we've we have obviously been very open sharing information so far. We are going to have to move, I think, to a sort of tight hole position going forward, because obviously what the results of those horizons are is extremely price sensitive, so we're going to have to be a little bit more restrictive in information flow through there until we can tell the markets what the results of the various horizons are.
Yeah, so it'll pretty much be operation silence until you get that data out of there, and so you can collate that. And how long will this take then, David?
Well, from here, I think we're looking in a position where we will be through all of the, at the moment, assuming we stay on schedule, we'll be through all three target horizons by kind of end of November, very early part of December.
Yeah.
It kind of can be quite variable when you hit the horizons, because it does. It's not a linear equation between depth and time, because it depends on what you're drilling through, how fast it takes. But we will let people know when we hit each of the target horizons.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, when you get that information, how long does that take to collate and process and, regurgitate in a presentable format?
Well, we'll see. But we'll obviously be doing that as quickly as we possibly can. It shouldn't take too long.
Yeah, okay. And in that release last week, you mentioned the convertible loan note facility. Take us through that, please, if you could, David.
Yeah, it's, as we had sort of said to the market for some time now, if we, past the contingency for hitting a rainy day, we wanted to put in place a debt facility. And, we hit that rainy day with the refund. So we have signed a facility. We were offered equity debt, equity at a discount, obviously, and lots of different facilities by people. This was, for where we are at the moment, I think considered the most sensible one to take. And we took advice on it, and it's definitely the cheapest form of debt available. Really critically compared to kind of most things out there, it doesn't include any warrants, which I know are not well liked by the market, because they take away a degree of the potential upside. It's fundamentally a conventional debt facility. There is a convertible element to it, but it's convertible, other option in discussion and based on various metrics with the lender, which is a bit too complicated necessarily to get into on the call. But the result is that I would expect the net effect will be that we won't draw down the full amount, and this is one of the reasons why we took this structure rather than taking some of the other offers that were out there. We haven't had to commit to taking the full amount. So, we might, but I think the intention at the moment is that we won't take the full amount. And the likelihood is that a chunk of this one getting repaid as conventional debt in a chunk would be converted. Mm-hmm. It's also worth pointing out that it's a very friendly lender who's been an equity investor in the company since the inception, and who has agreed to trade any shares of the convert in a way that is not toxic or harmful to the share price. So, you know, all things considered, when you need a rainy day, you need a bit of extra capital, you've got to do something. And this, I think, when we kind of work through it and look at the options, this is, you know, by far and away the best thing for the shareholders.
Yeah, and you say you probably won't draw it all down. So it's up to 5 million, is that right?
It's up to 5 million. I mean, look, I don't want to sort of bind us to anything, but at the moment we're just looking to sort of draw it down in tranches, you know, as needed, rather than just taking a whole load of capital and selling. You know, we're not a long way away from finding out where we are on this well, and that's when we'll have a more sort of, you know, either way, we'll have a more sort of sensible conversation with shareholders and investors about you know what to do next, how to develop the field, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, David, thanks for that. And like I said, it'll be Project Silence for a while now, but hopefully we'll be chatting again before the end of the year. But before you go, give us three reasons why someone listening right now should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think, firstly, this is a very unusual mix here of with a small E&P company of having a producing asset while at the same time having really interesting exploration upside. I mean, if you go online and have a look at some of the evaluation models that the analysts have done of what the exploration side would be worth if it comes in, yeah, it's phenomenal. And then you've got an appraisal side, which obviously is, you know, more likely to come in the Mango, where you can build a very nice, very profitable oil company out of it, and fundamentally you've still got a producing asset at the back of it. So it's a very interesting risk reward matrix. Secondly, we're drilling a well. There's not that many people drilling a well today, and it's not going to be too long before we know what the results of that are. So that is a very interesting thing for people looking at information coming to the market. And thirdly, I would say this one, you know, we have management here who very much aligned with the investors, both in terms of our compensation structure, share options are all at 20p, and actually where we make the money, which is, you know, about double the share price today. So you've got a management team very, very much aligned with the interests of the shareholders.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff, David. Good to chat to you. And like I said, hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks very much, Justin. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Oilex, OEX. At 4, Bidstack, BIDS. At 3, Cradle Arc, CRA. At 2, Horizonte Minerals, HZM. And number 1 is U Group. That is YU Dot. Had a massive fall out of bed with the trading update, but bounced back quite strongly, actually. Also, here we go. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. They are at 5, Frontera Resources, NDA update. At 4, USD, £1 million funding secured for Blueberry Project, that's vast. At 3, Europa Metals, quarterly activities and cash flow report. At 2, Horizonte Minerals, appointment of Endeavour Financial. And at number 1, it's, of course, Lawrence Reed on the podcast today, Europa Metals, drilling update, and Toral project in Spain. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.